From the podcast that brought you to each of the last lesbian bars in the country and back in time through the sapphic history that shaped them, comes a brand new season of Cruising Beyond the Bars. This is your host, Sarah Gabrielli, and I've spent the past year interviewing history-making lesbians and queer folks about all kinds of queer spaces, from bookstores to farms to line dancing and much more.
For 11 years, every night women slept illegally on the common.
We would move down to the West Indies to form a lesbian nation.
Meg Kristen coined the phrase women's music, but she would have liked to say it was lesbian music.
And that's kind of the origins of the Combahoover Collective.
You can listen to Cruising on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. New episodes air every other Tuesday starting February 4th.
Hey, I'm stand-up comedian Ophira Eisenberg, and I am mom to a very spirited 9-year-old and host of Parenting is a Joke. Each week, I talk to comedians and celebrities about what it's like to raise kids while keeping your career afloat. There is no parenting advice here, okay? Just hilarious stories from the chaos of everyday life, from school drop-offs to airport meltdowns and everything in between. We're all figuring it out. New episodes every Tuesday and Thursday. Subscribe to Parenting is a Joke wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode and the entire year of episodes is proudly brought to you by California Cryobank. Use code QueerFam25 for a free level 2 subscription to their donor catalog. Make those babies, y'all, and then come tell me about them.
The Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love.
There's a level of loss that comes that we have to take these, I'm doing quote unquote, non-traditional paths. And there's a level of loss that one of us or all of us are not going to be biologically connected. There is loss at all of the hoops we have to go through, be it monetary, be it family-wise. Like, there is so much loss on our journeys.
Yeah, I mean, I accept that. And then on the other hand, it's like, you know, when I look at our son and he's like so happy and so silly and like all of those things, it's like it doesn't even come close to what it was. And that's sort of also kind of where the film came from, is sort of like you do anything for your child. And that's such a weird immediate, like the second I was handed this like 7-pound potato, I was like, oh, I would like truly do anything for this kid.
Welcome, friends, to the Queer Family Podcast, the show all about family, but with gay. I'm Jamie, I'm your host. And as you probably know, this is the show that celebrates, uplifts, highlights, and normalizes LGBTQIA families in all of our beautiful identities. And I am happy to say that you right now are tuning into our third annual Pride Extravaganza. Oh yeah, baby. The entire month of the blessed June, that is the only time I'm ever going to use that word, the blessed June, Pride Month, we are pushing out double the episodes of Queer Family Goodness. So you're not only going to get an episode on Monday, you're also going to get an episode on Thursday. The entire month, you're getting 10 beautifully gorgeous episodes of Queer Family Goodness. And this one is good. I got to sit down with Brian and David. They are gay dads through adoption. They also happen to be filmmakers, and they made a film that is out right now that you should all go watch. I watched it. And as you'll hear in the episode, it kind of chronicles their adoption journey, but it's also a dark comedy. So you'll hear in the episode that when we recorded, I had only had the time to watch the first half of the movie, which is the light and happy part of the movie. It's beautiful. It's happy. It's wonderful. Since then, I have watched the rest of the movie, and I'm going to tell you something. It's a dark comedy. It gets dark. So if you don't like blood, you know what? I don't care. Watch it. It's worth it because it is all about representation, and it chronicles a queer family's journey to parenthood, which is pretty awesome if you ask me. So I want to get right to the episode. I don't want to waste your time with stories about my life. Just know life is crazy with the two kids and the many jobs. And I'm just happy to be able to keep bringing these episodes to you. All right, let's do this. Let's roll that tape. Helen, Beulah, let's do it. They're not real. I don't have assistants. Even Brian and David are like listening to this like, oh, she has assistants. No, I don't. They're made up assistants, y'all. They're made up. But I got to have fun somewhere. All right, Helen, Beulah, come get off my couch and stop smoking your cigarettes and drinking the whiskey and get over here and press this button. Let's roll that tape. Let's go. Happy Pride, y'all. Happy Pride.
Queer Family Podcast, love is love.
Hi, Brian and David.
Hi.
Hello.
Should I have said David and Brian? How do people usually say it?
He prefers that, yeah.
How do your friends do it? Because you know there's a way the names flow better. That
Our friends since do Brian and David resists.
See, because there's always a way it flows better and we're not stuck to those heteronormative things where they always say the husband's name first.
And we didn't hyphenate our last names when we got married, nor did we hyphenate them for our child. And we always wondered how we should put them because I think in a heteronormative way, you put the woman's name second, right?
Right,
you do.
Right.
And we were always like, oh, well, if anybody questions those things, is there going to be an issue? But it always sounded better, Crano Craig, which is Brian's, which I'm because Craig Crano, even though it sounds OK, Crano Craig really
flows
like just
better.
Kind of flows better. And the funny thing is Brian, when we were thinking about this, was like, and he's Italian and Jewish. When we were thinking about this, he was like, we should just change our name to Cragano.
But that's something we do too. Like, don't you know your gay couples as like these made up names that you, don't you do that? We do that with all our gay friends. We have the Franzitos, we have the Del Chicos, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, Kelwoods. So, you know, we all do
that.
Did
you guys change your names?
No, we didn't.
But it's like a Brangelina or whatever it is.
Exactly. And we do that with all our friends, every single one of them. We mesh the names together, but we hyphenated, but we went with Kelton Woods because it sounds better than Woods Kelton.
Yeah.
Kelton Woods sounds like a luxury development.
It does. or like a beautiful real estate company.
You're like selling high end property.
Kelton Woods.
Yeah. It sounds very regal, doesn't it?
It does.
Look at us.
It does.
But this is going to be fun because I feel like we have so much to talk about. I'm really excited to chat with you two. But before we get into your whole story and journey, let's have you explain who you are and why you're here talking to the Queer Fam Squad. You got to do your 30-second elevator pitch. Here we go. On your marks. Get set. Go.
We're David Craig and Brian Crano. We've been together for 15 years, got set up on a blind date.
We're filmmakers.
Filmmakers.
And adoptive parents of a little boy who's awesome. And we made a movie about all of this, sort of. It's a kind of a funny horror movie that comes out on June 6th called I Don't Understand You. And what else is important to say? We still speak to each other.
We do. We work together and live together and parent together.
Yeah.
Did we make it?
Well, you went over, but that's okay. Oh.
I couldn't see the timer. I only saw the double zeros.
Oh, yeah. 41 seconds. But that's cool. I don't fault you for it. You have a lot to cover. You know, as we usually do in queer families. Okay. 15 years ago, you met. And I know your film because you sent me a little screener of it. I remember in your film that you were celebrating your 10th anniversary. So it's been a journey since what this film is about. And this film is slightly based on your adoption journey. Am I correct?
Yeah. I mean, at the beginning, the sort of kernel of the idea. So when we were going on our 10th anniversary, we had been in the adoption process for about 18 months. We had matched originally with a mother, a birth mother that turned out to be like an adoption scam,
which is
unfortunately very common. Mm-hmm. And then we had like taken a little break. And when you're in the adoption process, they send you these kind of like one sheets about these situations. And we hadn't like told our lawyer or anything that we were going to take a break, but we had just done it sort of ourselves. We just hadn't like responded to anyone for a while. And then one day he was at work and I was at the house and we both got the same one. And separately, without communicating about it, we're like, maybe this one, like something about the situation, or it had been enough time, or we just had a feeling. And we called each other and we're like, I think maybe it's this one. And we both said, okay. And we sent in our stuff. You send all these materials about your family and stuff.
Without realizing that 6 weeks later she was due and we were just about to go on our 10th anniversary trip, which we were thinking was just going to be this amazing anniversary trip, but it ended up becoming our baby moon. And on the night of our actual 10th anniversary, we were in a remote village in Italy, and Brian directed me off the side of the road, and we got stuck in a ditch for 6 hours.
So that is all true. Okay, that's all true.
Up until that point is pretty autobiographical. Pretty, and then we pitched the idea to a few friends, and they were like, "Oh yeah, that's a horror movie." And so we elaborated on it. And what we didn't realize, and we can get into it whenever, but like what we didn't realize is how therapeutic.
Mm.
You know, traumatizing it in a narrative.
Dramatizing it.
there's my trauma speak.
Yeah.
Dramatizing it. Dramatizing it actually helped us with the trauma.
Well, and also when you're having a new baby, it's like the feel, like this, you know, your first kid, like, is very much sort of like cracks you open in all these different ways, which is similar to the experience of a character in a horror movie where they just have no idea what the fuck is about to happen. So that was sort of all made sense emotionally.
Yeah, it does. And the therapeutic part, too, I really understand. And I say this all the time on the show, like these stories, our family building journeys and just our stories as queer folks living in this world need to be told. And the more we tell them, the more therapeutic it is and cathartic it is for all of us.
Yeah. It normalizes it, right?
Mm-hmm.
We always say, and because we're in the film business, there's a genre in the film business called LGBTQ films. Mm-hmm. And even though they're needed, we also want to make sure that it's not just genre-fied, like that all of our stories are being told in every aspect. And it isn't just about being queer. It's about the family. It's about everything. And
well, yeah. And I mean, there's like a, you know, for so long, the majority of the films that were made were about the AIDS crisis or about a coming out story or about some kind of like heavy trauma thing. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, like that's just not very representative of our life experience and our friends' life experience. And it's like, we have kids, we have families, we do shit, we work, we get fired, we argue, we break up. You know, like there's all of these like real other areas of conversation that are useful to show. So,
yeah. Agreed. And that's why I like the movie, because while you're showing, you know, this gay dad journey to adoption in the very beginning of it, and you're showing yourselves as a couple, it's really sweet and it's very it feels real. I said we were going to talk about your family first, and look at, I'm talking about the film. It does feel like the moments with you two together, it's funny, it feels real. It feels like a gay couple really did write this, which I very much appreciate. And I appreciate that it's not going to be categorized as an LGBTQ film because it's about something totally different, which I also appreciate, right? And we need more.
That was the funny part about sending it around before we even got it made, was like, our, you know, heterosexual people that we knew that were reading it were like, I can see myself in this. I was like, look at what we've been doing for years.
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
It's always funny when you're like, oh, this could be a man and a woman. And you're like,
yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
No difference. No difference, y'all.
Yeah.
So funny and so important. And more like this needs to be made. So, you know, thanks for being icebreakers and for badasses in breaking that mold, right? And more of us need to do it. Hey, y'all, hey, I just have to jump in and interrupt quickly right here, because at this point in our conversation, we had a really wonderful discussion about Brian and David's coming out journeys and about representation and how much it matters. I mean, it's a beautiful conversation, but I had to cut it because I really do try to keep these episodes to under an hour so you don't get too tired of hearing my voice yammer on too much. So I had to make this huge cut, but I'm going to release that part of the conversation for bonus content. So if you want to hear their coming out stories and just an argument for representation, head to my Patreon at patreon.com/thequeerfamilypodcast, or you can also subscribe to my podcast in the link in our show notes, and you can get it there. Even if you make a one-time donation, you'll get the bonus content. So it's a really wonderful little conversation. It's about 10 minutes, but I had to cut it. Sorry, because you don't want to hear me talk too much. Anyway, okay, let's get back to the episode. It gets to some really great stuff. Here we go. Okay, let's get into, so you meet, you fall in love, you got married, I'm assuming, you did the thing. You don't have to get married, it's fine, we're cool with that too.
We were living in New York at the time, and we were both really set on just doing domestic partnership. Mm-hmm. One of our like queer icons, Justin Vivian Bond, we were at
Thanksgiving party
and was just like, who do you want taking care of your medical decisions if you're in the hospital?
Oh, yeah. Before she said decisions, I was like, not my parents.
Literally, because our whole thing was like, I had always been like for marriage. I was like, I get the luxury of deciding that that's not for me if I don't want it.
Yeah.
And it wasn't even about the paper. It was like, I always had such a quandary around why most people, when they're asked how long have you been married rather than how long have you been together? And some of the most formidable years of our life were prior to us getting married. Like,
well, also our marriage predates our legal right to marry.
Yeah.
Our relationship predates our legal right to marry.
What year were you married?
We were married
14.
Yeah.
And we got together in 2009.
Right. My wife and I are really similar. We got together in 2008, but married in 12. Right.
Yeah.
So
we were both just like, in the same way when we were adopting, like we got the choice to actually think about what we wanted to do. And then when we got that wonderful, like knock on the head, like, who do you want to do this? We were like, okay, we'll get married. So yeah.
Like just to button everything up. So we're safe legally, really.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
That's why it matters so much is totally to save us legally. We'll be right back.
Queer Family Podcast, love is love.
Sorry to interrupt y'all, but I want to tell you for a second about my promo code with California Cryobank. You're going to use code QUEERFAM25 for a free level 2 subscription to their donor catalog. Because, well, as we all know, if we listen to this here podcast, making a family the queer way is not easy. But California Cryobank has us covered. California Cryobank has helped thousands of LGBTQIA folks take that first intentional step toward parenthood. And they offer many, many resources for us LGBTQIA folks as well, like second parent adoption letters and many more wonderful things. And because let's be honest, there are really very few accidents in queer family building. It takes thought, it takes soul searching, it takes spreadsheets. Brian gets it. And maybe a little help from a cryobank that gets us. What you're going to do is you're going to go to cryobank.com. You're going to use code QUEERFAM25. That's QUEERFAM25, as in 2025. And you're going to get a free level 2 subscription to their donor catalog. This code can also be used towards a discount on a level 3 subscription, which gives you even more wonderful perks. Go make those babies, y'all, and then come tell me about them. Because we deserve to be out there and proud. Let's go. All right, let's get back to the episode. Thanks. Thanks for listening.
Love is love.
Let's go into the your kind of adoption journey, because I ask my guests this all the time, because for us, this topic comes into conversation a lot earlier than non-queer couples do.
Sure.
And when did the topic of becoming dads come into the conversation between the two of you?
Like date 5. I mean, it was like so early.
Right. And why?
It was because it was something that we both had wanted to do. And I think growing up, when you're not sure if you'll be able to do it, it's on your mind all the time.
Yes.
And so like for both of us, I remember reading a thing about surrogacy on a treadmill when I was like 24. It was like when Neil Patrick Harris did it. It was that big story in People or whatever. And I like burst into tears because I was like, oh, this is like a thing that's possible. Right. And it had just I wasn't like actively thinking about it, but I was actively aware, getting back to the culture, like, oh, this will be more difficult for me than it will be for my straight brother.
We innately know that so many decisions are going to even have to be made. And we're also going to have to be on the same page.
Totally.
So when we enter relationships that seem like they're going to last, this is one of the main things we talk about. We got to be on the same page.
I also think because it feels so unattainable or at least so difficult, it actually is an easier conversation to have than like, hey, so I want kids one day. Do you want kids one day? It's like, is so far from a reality that you experience as a queer person, but it's also, you realize how difficult it will be to actually get a child, that you're like, oh, we can talk about this, because like this might not even be something that happens.
That's a really good point you make. It is easier for us to talk about because there's a shared knowledge that it's slightly unattainable and also there are so many ways to do it. So let's discuss this crazy idea, right?
Yeah.
So how did you come to the adoption route?
I mean, it was like such a journey. I mean, it was years of conversation about it because we were not originally like super on the same page. And like also, I tend to be very sort of like linear and logical. And I'm like the research department. And David is very impulsive and understands like what he wants, what we are going to do. but understands what he wants to do quickly. And I went through like, presented with like, how will we acquire a child? I'm like, okay, now I'm going to spend like 6 months researching every possible scenario and like war game, like how it's going to break down and how it's going to, you know, like where we are vulnerable and stuff like that. And we did that. So we looked at surrogacy, we looked at international adoption, which is wild. And then we looked at domestic adoption as well. We knew we wanted a baby. So that sort of narrowed out certain things. And then we had been pretty far down like a surrogacy path in terms of investigating that. And there's this great organization. I don't know if you guys have talked about it before, called menhavingbabies.org. They're so cool and so great. And like what I loved about that as a idea was just they were like, here is literally everything you need to know about this subject, which doesn't sort, there isn't like a real corollary that I have found about adoption, especially for queer people. But it was like, you know, so we went to this like one of their events in New York.
Yeah, just for listeners at home who I think they all know, but they host conferences nationwide and people go and just get all the education you need with resources. Yeah.
It was so great if that's your vibe. So we're in, but also you can meet with both egg donor banks and with surrogacy agencies. And so we had gone to one surrogacy meeting where the woman who was, you know, the lawyer was explaining to us how it worked. And she was like, oh, by the way, at some point, if you decide to cancel the pregnancy, that is your decision. And we were both like, what? Like, yeah. They're like, yeah, if the baby develops in a way that you're not comfortable with, or, you know, like if there's a medical concern, it's not the surrogate's choice. It's your choice.
Right.
And we were like, we don't want that choice. That is a horrible choice.
Right.
And then secondly, we were at this one of these men having babies thing, and it was like a horrible day anyway, because it was the day that Trump had gotten either elected or was the nominee or like one of those things.
Yeah.
So we're in a room with like hundreds of queer couples, and everybody's in like fucking terror shock. Like it was crazy.
Yeah, and everybody's like mourning and... Yeah.
Well, also, we better fucking do this fast. Like, there was a whole energy of like, we got to do this now because they're going to take this shit away.
This was the first time.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So this was in like 15, probably in 15. And then we met with one of these like egg donor places, and we walked in, and the first she looked at us and she was like, so you're going to want like a just like speculating. She's like, oh, you'll want like a blue eyed, blonde haired egg donor. And we were like, no, like, right. Like we had both been like, oh, if we're genetically not related, like, let's just pick something cool and do that. You know what I mean? Like we had no sort of like, I need to kind of like match our kid.
Match the genetics.
Us.
Right.
And something about those two events made us go like, oh, like, let's pump the brakes on this. This is not what
it
we're
wasn't
actually
feeling
looking
right.
for. Yeah, it just wasn't what we were after.
Right.
And then we had talked to an editor that I worked with who had just adopted his kid at the time and had a really wonderful experience. And so we started talking to the team that did all of that. And that kind of opened up, like, we went in and had like a 4-hour meeting with this adoption attorney where he explained like truly everything about the process and like,
well, we first did look into international, and then we quickly realized, and I'm sure this has been covered, about like the limits of international adoptions into the United States. I don't know how it is still.
Well, back then, what was it back then?
It was 4 other countries. It was South Africa, Colombia, Mexico and
Brazil,
I think.
Yeah. I don't know what the countries are now, but I know it is no more
it's
than
three.
Four.
No,
yeah.
Three.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, it's still South Africa, Mexico, and
Colombia.
Colombia, I think.
Yeah, and I've heard from couples who have pretended to be single parents, but a lot of countries won't even do that. I've talked to people who have put their cat's name as their spouse, like to like fake it.
The thing that we were thinking was like, we could do that, but like then the thing that we were uncomfortable about was like, if we did a single parent and did, you know, like a child from China, like only one of us could go and bond with the kid for those 6 to 8 weeks that you need to be there. And we were just both uncomfortable with that idea of like, who would we pick to do that? And like, how would we do that? And like, so it sort of limited us. Funnily enough, one of the number one agencies that was doing Colombian adoptions was in Strongsville, Ohio, which is where I am from. And I want to say, what, 3 months later? 3 months later, we're sitting in a hotel room somewhere, and we just see on the news that that particular agency got raided.
Yeah.
Because they were doing illegal adoptions.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's wild.
Whoa, whoa. So. Trust your gut. That's the lesson there. Trust your gut. Because the path that you end up taking is going to be the one that feels right. At least we hope so, right? Wow, you dodged a bullet there.
We ended up realizing, I think it took us a good 18 months to actually understand how we wanted to have a child. And it was also matching up with the lawyer we really felt comfortable with. He was fantastic. And he actually acts sort of as an agency himself, which is a very abnormal thing for a lawyer to do.
I don't know if that's true.
And then we started getting situations presented to us. So that's how
so you had to do all the work to to get into the agency or whatever.
Also, like one part of that I had no idea about, which was a really interesting like 48 hours, is that when you're adopting a baby, you know, obviously like some of these babies are going to have health challenges. Some of them are going to have things that are known, unknown, whatever, during the pregnancy. And they basically gave us like a 7-page sheet, single spaced, of like, what about this disease? What about this disease you've never heard about? What about this one? And we sat for truly like straight, you know, on a sofa, just Googling like, what the fuck is this thing? Like, can we deal with this? Are we prepared? That made it so clear, like what the responsibility of this is, like that
parenting,
just like that any of these things are possible, like shit I had no idea was a thing, you know what I mean, like sudden head falls off syndrome or something, you're like, what the fuck, like now I'm carrying my baby's head around and like what, you know, so it's
sudden head falls
but
off
this syndrome. Is something most couples I talk to, or most people I talk to who go the adoption path, this is the thing that was like so eye-opening to them and really made them really dig deep. Which then it just is another case for how intentional we queer folks are when it comes to family building. Are you kidding?
That is the giant thing where you're like, who on earth hands a straight couple a form that has
seven, they get no forms.
7 pages.
No forms at all.
7 pages. And we call it our gay tax, but like in a way, it actually is somewhat helpful to understand who we are as human beings and who we're going to be as parents.
Just being queer and facing life in general forces us to dig so much deeper. It really does. We have to dig deep.
I'm thankful for it in a way. Like, not that, like, I'm not thankful for the societal, you know, travesties that come along with it, but I'm actually thankful because I think the truth is so many people should be really thoughtful about the major events in their lives. And being queer in this society, we do have to overthink about the choices that we make.
For sure.
So true. It's so true. And you two are just laying this out so beautifully and brilliantly, and you speak so much more eloquently than me. So thank you for that. but all of this is just, it is so true, and so true to queer folks everywhere, and the hoops we go through to make our families, and the soul searching we have to do to get to the point where you two ended up is immense, right?
Yeah.
And I talked to somebody in England who not only do they have to fill out the form, they also have to do like group meetings where they're with other potential adoptive parents, and they all have to answer the questions in person.
Like in a group setting.
In a group setting, which he was like, that was the most nerve-wracking day of my life.
Answer
like,
how what would you their feel, preferences.
How would you feel about a cocaine addicted child? How would you feel about all the things, and answering on the video.
Yeah. No, I get that. I mean, like there were some of those meetings that weren't exactly like that, but there was like the first kind of, you know, like welcome to adoption kind of group meeting was like happy, the gay people on the happiest days of their lives. And then straight couples where the women were sobbing and the men were like just trying to like through in some horrible fertility journey. And that was such a weird vibe.
Yeah, because this is their last ditch effort.
Right. And for us, we're like, let's get in the game. Like, we're ready. Like, let's go. So right. it was like a very interesting.
Brian dunked on them.
Yeah, like, suck up. No, like, no, of course I'm very sensitive.
But of course.
I actually think the thing that should happen for any couple or any single person who is planning to have a child, they should be visited by a social worker.
The thing that
even just us, like the invasiveness of that.
Ugh.
Was so invasive that like it both made us go like, holy shit, this is real, but also made us go like, oh, holy shit, we really want to be parents.
Right.
Yeah, it makes you super intentional about it. And like, you know, we're both writers. So like having to sort of articulate on paper is always good for us. Like, why are we doing this? Like, what is the point? And like, what are our feelings about it? And what do we want to accomplish? And like our son had some health challenges. And prior to that, like just the kind of like residual shit of my childhood was like accomplishments. Like I, you know, like go to college now, like be early, be smart. And then like our son wasn't extremely well when he was born. And then it was like, I just want to be happy. I don't give a fuck what he does. Yeah. Like, I just want to be happy. And like, that was such like a kind of like mind opening experience that I was made a better parent because he was sick. And like that would never have happened had he just like bounced out and been like, let's party all, you know, like, so it was you know, all of these things that seem like challenges that are kind of like baked into the process ended up being like very instructive and helpful for the kind of parents that we try to be.
Yeah. And maybe none of that would have happened if you had just fallen accidentally pregnant, like some folks do. And I do want to say for any of my non-queer listeners listening who have gone down the adoption route or who have had troubles building your families, I'm not saying all straight people are not as intentional as us. I'm just saying we happen to be real intentional. And
we have no choice.
I mean, in very rare few instances, there are some accidents, but for the most part, there's no accidents in queer family building. There are none. Yeah. I mean, there are like a couple. I talked to one, at least I've talked to one, and that was a fun conversation. But
cool.
The things we have to go through to make our families, I think, to say it bluntly, make us better people than the rest of the world.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know about the competition, but for me, like, it made me a better person than I was sort of at a basic state.
Okay, so you made the decision to go the adoption route, and then it was a rough, bumpy road. It sounds like, can you go a little bit? I don't want to go too much because I do want to talk about your movie because I think it's a really great movie. But the hiccup, the major hiccup you had.
And we're very open about it because we also think there should be some change to the whole process.
Yeah.
They give you all the information that they can,
legally.
That they legally can when you first agree to adopt. We weren't really educated on, or the resources weren't out there enough with was the different ways you could match with a birth mother, i.e. like, you know, agency or lawyer to lawyer or.
In this case, there was like a finding. There's a couple of agencies that are sort of not regulated that are just sort of like.
Matchmakers,
mm-hmm. Yes, that's it. And that was this situation. So you had a matchmaker in one state, a birth mother in a different state. They had never physically met. So nobody had interfaced with this birth mother in person. So she presented medical records, which were forged or from her previous adoption or from her previous pregnancy. And there was no baby. And she had ended up, she had ended up doing this four or five times.
Oh my
and
God.
The agencies, there's no way, there's no like DMV that's like, you're bad at this.
There's no like umbrella safety.
And they all make money no matter, right. You know what I mean? So it's like they're incentivized to hope for the best because maybe she is really pregnant this time.
Right.
And oh my they're going to get paid either way.
So you went down, I mean, you were far down the path with this birth mother.
Yeah.
We matched with her and then we had been, so she was 6 months pregnant, which I believe at the time was when you could start the adoption process. Cause it had to be past the point of, you know, being able to terminate the pregnancy or mm-hmm. depending on which state you were in, but it was and we had been with her for 2 months and there was a really interesting moment in which we were in the car and we were talking. Every time we had talked to her, she was so unbelievably excited, but she wouldn't video call with us. And there was just something innately inside of me that kind of like from week two up until that 2 months, I had some weird feeling inside of me that was telling me something was up. And we were in the car and she goes, "Did you guys pick out a name?" And I literally turned to Brian and I go, no, don't say it. Because I didn't want to give away that name because it was something that was so important to us.
That's and so personal. Yeah.
And 2 days later, we found out that she wasn't being completely honest with us.
Well, she wasn't pregnant.
I'm giving every benefit of the doubt because I think about this in a way because like it is so unbelievably vulnerable to us, but I can't imagine being in a situation in which this is your option.
Right.
And so I do try to honor that in a way of at least giving some sort of sympathy to the situation, but it is kind. So hard. Oh. On us.
Oh, and I actually, up. If you're considering it, don't do this.
I actually blame, the agency rather than her because the agency should be more accountable because they're actually the ones making the money. Right.
So that's my question to you then. You went through this terrible, horrific thing. Do you have advice for folks who are maybe starting their adoption process or are in it and, you know, trying to match? Like, what would you say to help people to prevent them from getting into a situation like this? And that's a lot to say, but
I have a couple of tips and then a sort of rejoinder. But the first one is talk to your friends who've done this process before. When we started talking to our friends about it after the fact, everybody we knew was like, "Oh yeah, we went through this." Like there was some version of like, right. "Yeah, it didn't work," or yeah, whatever. Like there was some version of it. So it's much more common than anybody you're talking to prospectively about adopting who is going to take your money in the process wants to talk about. So right. It's great to be very upfront with your lawyers and your team and whatever, and just say like, "I'm aware that this is a thing. I want to do everything possible to avoid it. Like, what are the best practices in this moment legally and et cetera to do that?" So that's the first thing. The second thing is to work with, you know, in our case, if we were to do this again, we would only work with a lawyer who is working directly with the person. So not across the state line, not something like that. Like this birth mother has been in my office, is clearly pregnant. We've talked about it.
Who's in the same state as the birth mother?
Who has an actual relationship? Because once we matched with our real birth mother, who is 100% different emotionally, intentionally, you know, in the way that with the seriousness with which she was talking about the pregnancy, it was immediately clear. Like, oh, she's for real. Mm-hmm. Like she's taking this, she understands what this is going to be like on mm-hmm. her. She has mm-hmm. thought about what this is going to be like on her, and her whole presentation and affect was totally different. And a lawyer had our lawyer sat with the pretend person, it would have been 2 minutes and she would have been out of there.
Right.
And so, or us even, you know, like, now knowing the kind of seriousness with which a birth mother who is intending to place their child takes that decision, it would have been totally clear. So just working with somebody who has actual firsthand relationship with the birth mother is like a total best practice. And then being really, really clear with yourself about what risk you're willing to take, which is no different than the risk of, you know, in any other type of child, you know, acquisition or whatever. Like it's no different than a miscarriage or whatever. Like, it, you know, it has that same kind of all the same emotional beats.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to say if you don't have a friend to put that you can personally talk to about it, I would say the biggest thing is weigh out how much vulnerability both of you are willing to give up. there are 100 different ways it could go wrong for you. And you have to be willing to be open enough about the vulnerability you're willing to tread on and can emotionally handle. Because it might take longer if you do a safer route. It'll weigh on you less than if you... Because like what ended up happening is once she wasn't... Once we found out she wasn't pregnant, they were like, oh, well, you'll still be with our agency for the next 2 years. And you're like, yeah, but why would I want to work with you when this right. situation didn't work out?
You didn't care of me
You did not take care of me. And then when we found out that what we're actually comfortable with is our lawyer knows another lawyer who has a client who is actually in front of him and is pregnant. And those situations are way less frequent than the agency situations. But it also gave us the sort of comfort to know that our birth mother was really in this to
right.
continue with the adoption process.
Well, and that's very important to say. So it's like, yeah, this has been a long preamble about how it can go wrong. And then like what actually happened is how it can go right, which is in our case, our birth mother was like, from the time that we matched, she was like completely intentional about what she wanted to do. She ran the show. She was like, this is how it's going to work. This is what I need you to do at the hospital. This is what I need you to meet my family in this kind of order. Like just, she was just incredibly with it and like had really, you know, had really like taken on board the seriousness of what she was doing. And like, and as such, like, you know, in our movie, like she's the hero, like her character is the hero of the movie, like very specifically.
Don't tell me, don't ruin it for me. I'm kidding.
But like, you know, and that was kind of the reason that we wanted to make the movie, because like often in film and TV, like, you know, somebody putting their child up for adoption is like, you know, throwing the baby out the window of a moving car. And it's like, that is not true. Like this is a hugely consequential decision. She knew emotionally what this would cost her going into it. And she did it. And she, you know, and it cost her that, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, so it's like, it is all of those. It takes like such insane bravery to be like, I cannot do this in this place that I'm in. I need to make the best decision for this baby that is selfless. And so like that was for us like so moving and so and the kind of like things that she wanted us to commit to her about how we would raise our son. Like we talk about them now. We take them very seriously. Like that is a promise that we honor and like think about. Mm. And so, although he needs to eat more vegetables, but that's kind of on him.
They all do.
Yeah. But anyway, but that's sort of like, you know, the real kind of the light at the end of the tunnel is like, there are people who are very, very serious about making sure that the baby that they're carrying has the best life they can possibly give it. And if they decide that is you, that is their decision. And like, you got to trust them. And then you got to do what you can to, you know, make that real.
Yeah. I love the idea of the birth mother being the heroine, because in many aspects, she's the heroine of your life, right? She gave
totally.
You.
I always say she's probably the bravest person I've ever met in my life. She did not need to. And she, like, this is her story as well, but she came, what she gave to me, I can share, which is she came into the room. We had been there for 4 days and she came into the room and he was laying on my chest and she just looks at me and she goes, he's your kid.
Aww.
And I had such fear for myself that I was going to have imposter syndrome as a father and feel as if I took somebody's child. She bravely walked into our room, having not really wanted to see him prior.
Right.
And she just gave that to me and gave that to us. And it was probably the bravest moment I've ever witnessed somebody in their entire life.
That's so sweet. And that's the thing with queer family building. There's a level of loss that comes that we have to take these, I'm doing quote unquote, non-traditional paths. And there's a level of loss that one of us or all of us are not going to be biologically connected. There is loss at all of the hoops we have to go through, be it monetary, be it family-wise? Like, there is so much loss on our journeys.
Yeah, I mean, I accept that. And then on the other hand, it's like, you know, when I look at our son and he's like so happy and so silly and like all of those things, it's like, it's not even, it doesn't even come close to what it was. And that's sort of also kind of where the film came from, is sort of like, you do anything for your child. And that's such a weird, immediate, like the second I was handed this like 7-pound potato, I was like, oh, I would like truly do anything for this kid.
Yeah.
And it was such a weird, I mean, I know that's like the most banal parent thought, but to come out of truly nowhere, you know what I mean? And we had like David was saying, we had like 5.5 weeks to like prep for that moment.
It was quick.
And so, yeah, it was wild.
Let's get to the movie, because I really think there are so many. I haven't watched the full thing yet because mom life, and I only got to the point where it's going to start to get dark, apparently.
Jamie, we haven't watched it either.
Well, you lived it. But I want to say, I think it's so well done. First of all, it's a really well-made movie. You've got big stars playing the two of you, which is great. But like you even say in the movie, I think one of the questions that you have to answer is, how far would you go for your kid? What would you do for your kid? And Brian, you say, I think your character is like, that's a crazy question to ask. I don't know. You're like on the plane. It was like, yeah. And that stuck with me because it's such a...
Hold on, Jamie. Can I just say... You're stereotyping us by thinking that Nick plays Brian and Andrew plays me. Listen, what are you saying?
It's because Brian said he's the planner, and that okay, whole
all right,
trip
all
right. itinerary I'll give was you, a I'll bit give you much, a buy. Brian.
I'll give you a buy.
Listen, it's real. I am, here, grab that.
David, I am you. I am you in a relationship. Not
that. That one.
What? Oh, is this the itinerary?
This is the actual
it's a
itinerary.
Little crazy. Oh, my God.
It's
I don't know if I could do this,
book.
David. I don't know yeah. how you do
he
that.
He hates it. He hates it.
Oh,
he
my God.
Did he read any of this? He did not.
No.
He did not.
Because you're going to take him on the journeys yeah, anyway, yeah. right?
Oh, but my he's God. He's always so like, funny. Wow, this restaurant's amazing. I'm like, yeah, we're at the best one. We're right. at the best one.
You did all
one.
The
like,
research for everything. Months. Yeah. Right. This is what I really love about the beginning of the film, because I know I have not watched the whole thing, but it feels so real. It feels like it could be me and my wife, how we banter back and forth, how we relate with one another. And you were telling me even before we started recording that other straight friends of yours are like, oh, this could be my husband and this, my husband and I, my, you know, which is kind of the point, right?
That's
we're just
point.
Normal. Yeah. We're just couples. But I really appreciate how real it feels, and just watching the two of you be a couple and try to embark on your adoption journey and also go on a honeymoon, an anniversary trip to Italy where shit hits the fan, apparently.
Yeah.
I think this is a great film and everybody should go watch it and, you know, support movies that just happen to feature queer couples, because why not? And I appreciate it. And that question you answered in the beginning of the movie, where you're like, would I die for my kid? What a crazy question to ask. As a parent, you understand that so innately, that question, right? And it's
yeah,
not
yeah.
it's like, of course I would die for my child. I would do anything for my child.
Yeah Well, and you know, that premise is sort of challenged through the back half of the movie in a very fun and silly way, but
we take some liberties.
But I mean, I think it's like, it's the movie stars Andrew Rannells and Nick Kroll, who are so great and
so good. They did a great job.
Yeah, well, it helped that they've been friends for a really long time, so you uh-huh. didn't have to kind of like, okay, now pretend you have some backstory and history.
Yeah,
like
right.
they really love each other as people, and so it's like, it was easy for them to kind of like connect in a real way and sort of be there for each other, which was very, very cool. But it's also just like, it is so, you know, there are moments in the movie when we were shooting them that we were like watching the monitor, and David and I were like kind of struck by it. We're like, oh, we're watching gay characters like experience joy.
Yeah.
And it was like, we really couldn't think of that many. You know what
right.
I mean? And that's what's so kind of alarming about it. Like, even in this sort of like, the movie is very funny and very silly and has these kind of horror elements to it, but you're still like, the characters are experiencing a real thing. They're going mm-hmm. through a real thing, and you haven't seen something like this.
you know, and it's like, and so it's like a huge, it's like an unusual experience for gay people watching the movie that are friends and stuff, where they're like, oh, like it actually hits them in kind of like a different way. So it's nice for that.
Case in point, the scene in the hotel, when you check into the hotel and the hotel concierge or whoever brings you to, he's so embarrassed because it's one bed and there's like all that awkwardness that comes with being a queer couple traveling.
By the way.
Right. Of course it did. I fully believe it did. And then in the same scene, that's when you find out that you're the dads, that you get a phone call. And then you have the moment, this is in the same scene, you have the moment of joy and the moment when you both realize you're going to be dads, juxtaposed next to that awkwardness we face as a queer couple everywhere we go sometimes, right? With the beds and the situation and a gay, oh, the gays, you know? So I think it's beautiful.
And I think something that you're touching on too is like, we don't give ourselves the opportunity to often, we give byes way too many times, right? Mm. Like we don't give ourselves the opportunity to sit back and grieve, right? Like a big thing we didn't realize until I think even during shooting, we were like, oh, this is a grief experience that we're having over the idea that we went through almost a 3-year process to have a child. We, you know, had an unfortunate event happen in the middle of that. We were like, oh, that's just supposed to be put on us because we're queer. And that's just the experience we're supposed to have, where it's like, oh no, that was really fucked up. Mm-hmm. Right. And like, I feel in the queer community, we often give so many buys to the negative things or the hardships that happen. That it's like we're allowed to talk about them. We're allowed to like, and in the end, we're allowed to experience joy together. Like that is a thing we're allowed to do.
And it's cathartic to see all the levels of emotions.
Yes.
In a queer relationship.
Yeah. Totally.
Right. And something that's not cliche, but real.
When we cast Andrew, he was like, it's so nice to read a part in a movie where I'm not just like, and then what did he say, girl? You know what
yeah,
I mean? And
right.
like, just
yeah.
this sort of like supportive, funny, queer guy who's like, I'm in the office and I'm here to like deliver the plot to you or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like it is a different experience. And like, you know, on some level, I'm sure subconsciously, we both ended up making like a movie that we would have liked to have seen as like silly weirdo queer kids, you know what I mean? Like, so hopefully there's some of that. Hopefully that sort of travels.
It's a real couple with depth and all the things that couples experience, but they just happen to be queer, which I love. And it really does normalize our relationships. Like, like you said earlier, before I think I started recording, it's just, yep, that's the point. We're just like you. Yep. It could be a husband and wife. If you read it on the script. So your friend said that to you, right?
Yeah,
if you're
yeah.
just reading the script, oh my God, this could be me and my husband,
right?
Yeah,
a man and a woman.
Yeah. Yeah, a man and a woman. So, and that's the
and
point.
And we probably would make way more money if it was.
We should have done it.
Yeah.
We should have done it.
That's why you're on the show. And everybody, all the listeners are going to watch it. But listen, I have to say, I'm not good with dark stuff. I don't like scary stuff. So I will definitely say the first, how much have I watched? Like an hour of it is really sweet and heartwarming. I don't know where it's going to go from here.
Yeah, it's going to get a little bumpy.
It gets a little hairy.
Yeah.
It gets a little hairy.
But it's okay. It's okay. You'll be fine.
Come to our premiere on the 2nd and I'll hold your hand.
Okay. Where's the premiere?
In New York.
Oh, okay. Yeah, let me know. I would love to come. Yeah, hold my hand, please. I'm scared. No, but I am really excited about this film. And I think, so tell everybody what they need to do to help lift your film up. Like, what do we need to do? What can we do?
Just go see it. It'll be in theaters June 6th across the country. Again, like a huge boon to get a movie with two queer leads two queer leading characters into theaters even. So mm-hmm. It's really funny. I promise you'll like it.
And bring a friend with you because honestly, and not just to buy another ticket, even though that's great, but also it's a great shared experience. Having seen it in the theater, it's a fantastic shared experience once you get past the hour also of a rom-com where the oohs and gasps are penetrable. So
okay,
I would say
good.
That. Yeah.
Bring a friend. And I'm going to bring a friend just for moral support. I'm so excited for this. And it's a real production. Like this is not, no, this isn't, doesn't feel, have the indie vibe that most queer films do.
Yeah, it's a big
right?
movie.
Yeah, it's a big movie. So
lots of stunts.
Yeah,
and lots. <it's>
lots. I can't wait. I can't wait to see the stunt. I mean, there's been so many knives, so I know something's happening.
It's a lot of Chekhov's gun in this movie. Yeah. So sort of set up a lot of stuff that's going to come back later. So.
And you'll get a sneak peek of our child at the end of the movie.
Yeah,
our actual babies in the movie.
Oh, really? Oh, that's exciting. And how old is your son now?
He's five, so he was three when we made the movie.
Aww. Yeah. Okay, well, congratulations on getting a real baby and also on this baby movie that is coming into theaters. Well, it's by the time this airs, I think it's in theaters, so everybody wants to go see it.
And we should say the title. I don't think we said the title.
Oh, it's called I Don't Understand You.
There you go.
Yeah, it's called I Don't Understand You. Go check it out. Go bring your friends to the movie and then, you know, share it far and wide because we need to uplift and highlight queer everything. So let's
go. Every day.
Let's normalize it. I love it.
All right.
I have one last question and then we go. I'm asking everybody in the Pride Extravaganza the same question. And that question is, it's a heavy one, but we've already touched on it so much. So hopefully it'll just be easy for y'all to just rattle off. It is, what does Pride mean to you? Because this is airing during Pride Month.
For me, I think it means paying my respect to the generations of men and women who really had a fucking rough go just being themselves. Mm. Some of whom I know and many of whom I, of course, are gone. And I think about them all the time. And I try to live in a way that would be of use and of service. And even though the challenges we go through are real, think about how lucky we are to be in this moment. And how lucky we are to be a family together in that. And this message was brought to you by Target.
definitely not Target.
Definitely not Target.
I was just like, wow, way to ramp this one up.
Guys,
right?
I'm trying to get corporate sponsorship. I'm
me
kidding.
Too.
No, sorry. But I think it's just about going like, holy shit, we exist. We deserve space. We should take it up.
Yeah.
We should use our lives for positive, fun things. And we should enjoy ourselves and not apologize too much.
Right. And thank you for your service and all the things that, right? Like, yes, agreed. And the history and the history and the history. What about you, David, on that note?
On that note, and I think following this conversation, something that I really am proud of is thoughtfulness. I think often, I like in relating to what I earlier talked about and not being able to truly have any sort of sense of self in my younger self, queerness made me be a thoughtful person. That part in me made me have to have real thought around what I want and need in life. It made me think about wanting to be married to my husband rather than just doing the everyday, like, let me just go with the punches. It makes me think about being with him every day and seeing if it's still something I want and choosing that. And made me think about being a parent. And every day I have to think about being a parent, right? Mm. Like it wasn't just something that I know I sound like I'm completely hating on hetero couples who just get the opportunity to have kids in a natural sort of.
It's okay. I always sound like that. It's okay.
But for me, it's like, because I got so lucky we got so lucky in that situation, I have thoughtfulness around it every day and I'm proud of that. So I think pride equals thoughtfulness to me.
I love both of your answers. I appreciate that. And I agree wholeheartedly. So thank you. Y'all are amazing. I love this. Everybody go watch the movie. And thank you for chatting with me on the Queer Family Podcast.
Thank you, Jamie.
Queer Family Podcast.
Before we say goodbye, I just want to say one last thank you to our sponsor, California Cryobank. What you're going to want to do is use code QueerFam25 to get you a free level 2 subscription to their donor catalog. Let's go. Let's go. Thank you, California Cryobank.
Love is love.
Whew. Well, folks, I hope you enjoyed that episode as much as I enjoyed it. And if you did enjoy it, feel free to listen to another or watch another. I have so many episodes for your listening or viewing pleasure. Just go pick one and enjoy. There's a lot. There really is.
And also, if you really do like this show, please, I know I say it all the time, but please do consider supporting the show on Patreon. You're just going to go to patreon.com/thequeerfamilypodcast. You're going to pick a tier, you're going to join, and you're going to get that bonus content. And you're also going to get my love and adoration for the rest of my life. I love you all. Thanks for tuning in. Keep on tuning in. And I'll see you next time. Mwah.